chat. Keep it alive through these lines I write. I keep it live cause I thrive. I might just blow your mind tonight. I'm so hyped, but it's no hype. From this height, it's direct hits on sight. I'm your type, lend me your ears to show you that there's something in me. I'm not giving up, I'm standing right here, holding these days hostage, and I'll make this my year. We turning fear into love, and the love's in the air. I love doing this cause nothing compares, nothing can share that same type of feeling when you're feeling them flares. They can't catch it, it's havoc. I rip to a tear, switch the scenario, my stereos, I leave them impaired. Variables start to change, and they're all in my range. I just gotta grab it, it's all mathematics. Every step is drastic, I make it fantastic. I'm trying to take your breath away, asthmatic.
This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo. This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo.
Yeah, just nod your head with it. So explicit and vivid. Every image is intricate, intimate. I put my all into it. No scrimmage and no rules. I'ma throw to it. Hear my heartbeat beating to the vocals. I'm so loco, lost my mind, oh no. It's ponderoso, dope so. No overdose, cause it's dope, yo. Man, this is house grown, mixed with some milestones. So I let the style flow, down like the Dow Jones. Bringing it with some foul tones, letting the crowd know. We getting loud, so it's eardrum rudiments. Yeah, we bring it rude again. Move, little hooligan. Music for tuning in, full time to the 10. I'm on my clock like I told you.
Hey, you guys, welcome back to the Anti-Media Radio. You're here with LaVon. I missed you last week. Apologies for being away. Sometimes I need to rest my mind and my body. But tonight, I'm really excited. I'm joined by some good buddies of mine. I'm here with Geta and BK. Say hello, guys.
Hello.
Tonight, we're going to do something really fun and awesome. We've each chosen random passages from pretty awesome books. One's called Buddhism for Beginners by Thubten Chodron. That's your name and I ruined it. Then we have Eastern Body, Western Mind, Psychology and the Chakra System, A Path to the Self by Anodia Judith. And then we have a rendition of the famous Bhagavad Gita. Thanks, buddy. This one's really interesting because it's from our buddy Pramasana Yoganda. I can say that, but I can't say the other thing. So, like I said before, we've each chosen a passage that's going to be perfect and awesome for all of us. So what I'll do is I'll start with one book. The first is the Buddhism for Beginners. We'll read a little bit, and then we'll have a discussion. And I encourage you guys to call us. The phones are open tonight. The number is 1-718-717-8296. So call in. Talk to us about what we've got going on. We'd be interested to hear from you. Again, the number is 1-718-717-8296. All right, guys. So the first thing that comes up, ironically, is something that we talk about a lot. And the subject is fear, and something amazing happens. Did you guys know this? Like, when you're afraid, your brain releases specific chemicals, and it goes, oh man, we need to not die right now. So you activate your fight or flight response, and what happens is you literally go from having this beautiful panoramic view to having this tunnel vision to ensure that you survive. So you literally limit your perspective when you're afraid. Did you know that?
It's like adrenaline and dopamine. Dopamine's also both of those like are happening when you start to pass away, as well as release of dimethyltryptamine, DMT.
DMT, yes. The spirit molecule. We'll have to talk about that sometime. But fear is something that we all project in our lives. sometimes unbeknownst to us, and it really plays a major part in our experience. So we'll see what the Buddhism book has to say about this. Fear is closely related to attachment. The more attached we are to someone or something, the more we fear not having it or being separated from it. For example, if we're very attached to and emotionally dependent on a particular person, we fear the relationship will end. If we are attached to money and financial security, we are anxious about not having enough. If we are attached to our image, we fear looking stupid in front of others. On one hand, it is normal to have concerns because we've been raised to be attached to these things. On the other hand, clinging makes us fearful and anxious. The solution isn't to abandon our friends, money, and reputation, but to let go of the attachment to them. Then we can enjoy them free of fear. So imagine getting all the things we were attached to and then asking ourselves, now am I happy forever? This enables us to stop obsessing about the things and people we are attached to. As we let go of the attachment, our fear of not having or losing these objects of attachment will naturally dissipate. Gail, I'll ask you first. What's your experience with having, like, what we just described, attachment and fear?
Well, whenever you value something, you know, whether it be your life or any of those things, other things that you mentioned, that, you know, you go on thinking, you know, how would life be without those things, and, you know, it becomes an important issue to you. And I guess it, like you said, about the narrowing of your vision, that's what it does to you. And then, you know, if you really focus on that, you're not really seeing the big picture, and it's kind of just being detrimental in your life.
The thing I struggle with is, like, how do you know that fear is hindering you if you're unaware? Like, what's the moment where you realize, like, holy moly, like, I'm unnecessarily afraid of this thing? Like, for me, it was really profound. I was 16, almost 17, and I couldn't sleep. I just stopped sleeping for, like, months. I was, like, freaking zombie, like, hallucinating, grumpy, but I couldn't relax. I was afraid of all kinds of things. Like, I started having abnormal fears. Like, I used to ride my bike 10, 15 miles a day. Then I got it in my head, I'm like, I could get ran over one day. I could die. And then I fixated on that, and I stopped doing it. And slowly, everything in my life became that type of perspective, where I was just like, oh, what if, what if, what if, what if? And I changed my whole world because of it. So I lived in fear. It was horrible.
It's funny. I first relate to that to something I would do very often. I'll misplace things. And I'll just go into the tunnel vision and be looking everywhere, and I can't find it, like, anywhere. And just, like, the thoughts going through my head, I need it, even though it could be something completely either insignificant to what I'm doing in the first place, or completely, like, replaceable or even available somewhere else in the house. But totally familiar with, like, the tunnel vision aspect of, like, just the fear of, like, losing or having lost something. It's silly. It's one of my character flaws, I guess.
But is it a flaw if you acknowledge it?
No, it's not. It's actually very hopeful. Well, I on what he was talking about, I've actually went into, like, plenty of times went into panic when looking for something, you know, that I thought I lost. It was just some mere object, you know, it wasn't really that important, you know, and I guess, you know, you can't really see, like, how it's affecting you unless you, you know, you like do some introspecting and like actually like put things into perspective.
And that's important. I think having that time of appreciation and silence and quietness with yourself is a beautiful thing, but it's something that isn't typically practiced within our culture. We don't all have like meditation break every 30 or 40 minutes or at any particular juncture of our day. Not everybody, but it, you know what I mean? It's just not something that's practiced. We go. We need things like fast, you know? We like everything fast and instantaneous. But I don't think that's a natural way to be. And I've learned through my own experience, through living in fear and coming out of it, that it's initiated by the self, and it began in my own mind, you know? That was very powerful to realize, like, you can change your perspective, you can alter your world, you can do that.
Yeah, perspective is a very huge, you know, aspect in life, because the way you see things are, you know, they're actually have a direct effect on the way your life is going to be. If you're going to see things in a certain light, like in a negative light, if you're only going to look for the bad things, that's all you're going to find. And unless you're going to, you know, put a conscious, you know, effort into looking for things that are, you know, that are what you're looking for, then you're not going to find those things, because you're always looking, you know, for other things at that time.
How do you keep track of what you're looking for? Because it changes every moment, right? Like,
yeah.
Your desires. Like, overall, how do you keep track?
Well, maybe just have, like, a mental, like, little blackboard, you know, just to have things, you know, that are just there, you know, beyond the conscious.
Yeah, like you would like set up like baby steps, like little milestones, and like give yourself to look something forward to, like within the process, instead of just the end result. Like, would be a little bit more motivating, I think.
Oh, for sure. Like, it's easy to get overwhelmed with tasks.
Yeah, I just wanted to add that fear is actually a really important emotion, and the way you go about it is not try to stifle that fear, because it's a natural response. And you, the thing is, you have to, like, it's the way you deal with it that matters, you know. If, you know, because fear usually, like, is basically like a warning, where, like, you know, fear has been, like, breeded into us for ages and stuff, you know, ever since we were animals and stuff, you know, it took us away from danger. And now we're in kind of a different world. The fear, it still hints at certain things that we have to worry about.
Mm-hmm.
It's something that's like an alert, you know, something you have to worry about. And it's important to deal with it properly, you know, instead of letting it take advantage of you.
Definitely. Like, I let it take advantage of me, and look what it did to me. What about you?
Well, yeah, there's plenty of times where I've, you know, let it take advantage of me, and, you know, it's trial and error, you know, you learn, you do something a certain amount of times, and, you know, you get the certain results and stuff. If it's not working, you have to go back and try to fix that, and it seems to work.
You bring up a good point. One of the things I've discovered about being alive is situations seem to present themselves in patterns. The same situation, just the characters change, but you get stuck in a loop. Like, it's like a life lesson, you know, and it's amazing. You do it over and over and over. It's literally insanity. And then one day you go, huh, this is just like that one time. Oh, and that was like that one time. Oh, and then you have this realization of, oh my gosh, I did that 4 or 5 times. Maybe I get it now. I'm not gonna do that again.
Yeah, you were talking about living like fast forward, and And that's sort of like what happens when you live it in fast forward. You're just, everything's in a loop, and you're not really paying attention to what's going on, and you're really missing out on a lot of life, living all that good stuff. And sometimes it takes some sort of a sign to break you from that chain, you know, something. Sometimes it's internal, sometimes it's external, but there's always something there that's got to break you out of that.
Mm-hmm. You talked a lot about introspection, and we're going to get into that. The next topic here is, what can we do about stress? Stress can be caused by a number of factors, some external, look at you, and some internal. When we are stressed because there's not enough time and we feel pressured, it is helpful to think about our priorities and decide what things are most important in our lives. Then we can choose to do those things and put the others on the back burner. When we're stressed because we don't have the ability to do something that is expected of us, we need to accept our limitations. When we aren't failures because we lack certain abilities, we need to communicate honestly with people who hold such expectations of us. And when we're stressed due to illness or sudden changes in our living situation, it is helpful to reflect that everything in our world will change. Then we can adapt the changes rather than fight it. Our stress is often due to not accepting the reality of the situation. We want it to be different, or we want ourselves or others to be different. However, what is happening at the moment is all that exists. Instead of rejecting the situation, which causes us more anxiety, we can accept it and work with it. Accepting whatever is happening isn't being fatalistic, it's being realistic. Having accepted the reality of the situation for what it presently is, we can still try to improve it in the future while remaining realistic about what is possible. Calming the mind through breathing meditation counteracts stress. So does meditating on compassion and patience. And this goes on to say that daily meditation is recommended to prevent counteract stress.
For me, my experience, one of the most important things to me that's hold dear is time to live. And there's certain times when I'm in a real hurry, and that's when things start going awry, and that's really when the stress really starts building up on me, and I, you know, just really takes over, and I have a lot of trouble with that, actually.
And what do you do to relax, like, when you are stressed? Like, have you ever tried meditation, personally? Keep in mind, that's just a word we make up to describe.
Well,
like,
it depends on which sense you're talking about.
Well, in any sense.
I like to take a moment, like, time out and just think to myself, you know, calm myself down and think of, you know, what's really going on. Like, you're talking about being realistic and trying to see the situation. And a lot of times I realize what I'm stressing about is it's really insignificant, you know, and it's just really petty, and that I'm just sitting there.
You're in a loop, right?
Yeah,
you're
stressing
like,
about
and then you have that moment where you're like, wait a second, this thing is not really a thing. You change your perspective, and then you're good.
My favorite thing to stress about and realize that is time. Like, realizing that time is like this, like, this measurement thing that really only matters to humans. Like, you look at an animal, they have no idea.
Right? Oh, I envy them. I so envy them. Like, I my ultimate dream is to not be moved by a clock, but to be moved by the sun. Okay, the sun's up. Okay, I'm going to do stuff. Okay, sun's going down. Okay, I'm going to relax now. Like, that to me is natural. That doesn't cause me stress.
I could see that how that would be a lot more comfortable.
Right? It's just a simpler way of living, to be in harmony with that which is. Like, why fight it? Like, I feel like all the things we've created in our lives, these parameters, like, they cause the stress. We made up all this stuff we do every day. We made it up.
Yeah, that's true. Pretty much everything. every it's all, you know, none of it's natural. You know, we don't really have lions and bears hunting us, you know?
Oh, my.
So, okay, so let's fantasize for a minute. So, we're talking about living by the sun. That seems pretty relaxing to me already. What would we do if we didn't have jobs? Like, what would you do if you didn't have to go do this thing to make money to pay rent?
I guess I'd be hunting and gathering something.
Well, at least hunting and growing.
Yeah, you'd be, like, creating some sort of food source, right?
I'd probably want to build something.
But even in those situations, we'd still be trying to, like, create comfort, you know?
True.
We can't go out, like, instead of going hunting every day, go, you know, like, harvest something, have something ready so you don't have to worry about it. I mean, that's pretty much where our society's at, but it's at such a high point where we created all these solutions, but on top of the solutions, we also created problems that caused all this stress and all these other things, all these other, you know, even though it's not as simple, it's...
I call it the medicated society. And I use that term because you're taking this pill because it's going to help you with this one thing, and it does. But as a result, you have all these other ailments and symptoms. So then you have to take another pill. I feel like that type of existence is replicated in everything that we do.
It's almost as if we strive for stress. I mean, come on,
right?
We sit there, we watch sitcoms or shows on TV where they have like a bunch
drama.
Of drama and you know, because we're seeking it. I guess
it moves us, it compels us.
Yeah.
It is like a drug. You get that adrenaline, you know. You get those certain endorphins.
I recently watched I forget exactly what show it was. But they were doing, like, tests with people on, like, their cell phones. And not just cell phones, but just, like...
technology.
Like, gambling and, like, the way that they're designed and, like the noise. Almost like Pavlov's dog, like, where the noise happens and, like, you begin to associate it with the reward.
Mm-hmm.
Like, even down with, like, the new, like, Facebook Messenger, like, noises and stuff. Like, you hear them and it just triggers, like, dopamine release. And, like, they were saying that... the actual moment just before, oddly enough, that trigger happens is when, like, you're the most excited. So I think that is probably very, very similar to, like, watching, like, a TV show that's, like, suspenseful or just, like, there's all these, like, things that we are kind of already anticipating to happen, and then we get...
rewarded.
Yeah, our brain rewards them for that.
That reminds me, oh, gosh, what's it called? It's, like, biofeedback. Have you heard of that? It's another form of biofeedback.
I've actually had... I'm thinking of making an invention of using biofeedback.
Let's do it. Should we mute this really quick?
What do you mean?
Okay. $1 million idea.
Do we want to share this with everybody?
It's okay.
Okay, open source.
I don't mind. The thing is, I got people, if I come up with an idea, people... you know.
Yeah, open source.
Fine,
here
know.
We go.
Well, my idea, I want to actually you take EEG waves and then convert them into a signal that you know, it's a biofeedback. You either get like an audio or visual or some stimulation, and the whole point of it is actually to counter like things like stress and to actually be able to recognize your brain patterns like as they're getting into stress and by giving you like feedback, you... it gives you like a chance to do, you know, derail your thoughts and to, you know, think more positive thoughts, you know, to get yourself out of that rut.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
It's like cognitive restructuring.
Yeah.
which kind of brings us full circle to what I was saying earlier. Like, when I lived in fear, I didn't get out via pill. I said, F you, drug companies. I'm not taking your mind control tablets. I opted for, and with a lot of persistence, as I had Kaiser at the time, which is an HMO, I took a lot of persistence to demonstrate that I didn't want to take drugs. Yeah. And it was atypical. But they allowed me to go to these classes where I encountered old men, young ladies, five-year-olds, professors, doctors, all kinds of different demographics that were feeling the same way I was. And we would all share collectively our thoughts, like our darkest thoughts, like our darkness, and just kind of interpret how each of us perceived our existence. And like through their eyes and through my own eyes, I was able to realize I am controlling this existence that is mine. All this stuff I am afraid of is literally a figment of my imagination. I created this, and yes, the feelings that result from it are very real, but I can decide what it is that I would like to feel. Generally, you know, obviously we're affected by our environment and the people around us, but what comes from the heart, I can determine that. That was so powerful. But imagine that people don't have the ability to do that. What do? They suffer in silence?
Pretty much, yeah.
So what would your invention do? Like, would it be like a...
It's a therapeutic device. Basically, it's a, like early warning systems. You know how they have the Richter scale, you know, the earthquake warnings?
Or yeah.
The thing is, I want to have it so it recognize your, you know, your brainwave patterns to where your out-of-control thoughts are going to be. So you have like an early warning before you get like deep into those thoughts and let it take over you.
Huh. It's like a little unhappy alarm.
Yeah.
I like it. So somebody make that, please. We need that stat. Get on it. What's our next topic here? We're about halfway through. Let's go to our next book. That was good. Thank you. This is our next book. This is our next book. So we're going to read from Eastern Body, Western Mind now. And the next topic is called Emotional Work, Reclaiming Our Right to Feel. So emotions are an instinctual movement of psychic energy. Only our mind interprets some emotions as good and others bad. When we repress the emotions related to abuse, that took a weird turn. We simultaneously repress all of our emotions, and within it, the movement of the spirit. All right. Healing the second chakra involves reclaiming our right to feel. The first step in reclaiming this right is to remove the guilt that blocks our feelings. We learn to see them as natural responses to the situations that affect us. The emotions related to abuse can be overwhelming and often conflicting. We may feel both intense longing and betrayal, with a simultaneous urge to both reach out and withdraw. That's interesting. We may feel expansive anger and contracting fear at the same time. We may feel strong emotions at some times and numbness at others. Interesting. So it continues to say, emotions are the precursors to action. So it is difficult to allow an emotion to flow if the action it inspires is dangerous or frightening. For instance, if allowing ourselves to feel our anger makes us want to kill someone, it can be dangerous to experience the feeling. If experiencing the sadness of a past separation makes our present solitude unbearable, we will find ways to avoid it. if feeling our need for someone makes us subject to their abuse, we cannot acknowledge our need. When the force behind an emotion builds up without being expressed or released, it creates an emotional excess. We need to create a safe way to lessen emotional forces and allow it to be better contained and channeled. The energy of an emotion can be channeled into an appropriate movement or activities. I often use my anger to clean the house. Hell yeah. Because when I'm angry, I have a lot of energy, but I cannot concentrate on anything difficult. Grief can be channeled into writing poetry, fear into heightening awareness, and longing into creative activities. When emotions are excessive, we can shift our awareness to the sensations in our body. Emotions want to move out, to take action and be recognized. We need to balance that by moving and in paying attention to the self inside. By consciously bringing our attention inward, the emotions soften and bring us a richer tapestry of information and connection.
Emotions are very powerful. A lot of times you feel emotions that are so powerful and you have a connection to them. Sometimes you have like a negative, repulsion to emotions, and instead of feeling the emotions, you push them away, and by in the process you give them more power by doing that. And what you said about channeling the energy of the emotions into something positive, like you said, cleaning your room and stuff, that is actually like that's probably the absolute best way to deal with them. I mean, I've had some times where I've done that, and like you feel in control of yourself. It's very important to be your own master.
Mm-hmm.
And
I don't know. I'm hearing that, and like, I immediately think of Robin Williams, specifically an article that I read. I think it was cracked.com on the forums, and the administrators were talking about how like people are so surprised that someone who's so joyful and funny on screen would be one to take his life. But unfortunately, it's something that is prevalent in the comedian community. So like crippling depression, they channel that emotion by like being the funny guy and like trying to steal attention because, whatever happened to their like previous experiences, they learned like that's a way to get attention and like at the same time like be someone other than themselves.
That's a good point. I never thought about that. I try to, in all of my experiences, I try and remember that the words of Tesla, Nikola Tesla, he's my hero. And he said that if you think in terms of frequency, energy, and vibration, everything will be simpler. And I couldn't agree with him more. And when I think of the energy that one creates, like you spoke of Robin Williams, he created beautiful energy. But I often wonder why and what was the root? And I think you bring up a good point, is we tend to create a situation that's comforting to us in however which way we can, right? We just kind of react to what cards were dealt. And often it's not the healthiest thing.
I don't say I fully agree with that. A lot of times, getting the emotions out, whether it be through channeling them or expressing them fully, but the most important thing is to actually be aware of them yourself. Be conscious of what you're feeling, and I guess by channeling it to something like a positive energy, it sometimes takes away from actually introspecting, the actual feelings and actually taking them at for face value.
Do you think that people like Robin Williams, who are kind of searching to fill a void, do you think he had that of introspection? Do you think he knew the source of?
I'm sure he knew.
Well, when I think about it, it was three generations of people that I knew that were strongly impacted by him specifically, which was unheard of since Michael Jackson died, I guess. The things that I don't think people consciously knew that, but I do believe Robin Williams did, because he there's many stories of him going out of his way to lift someone's spirits. When Christopher Reeves was in the hospital, he showed up pretending to be a Russian doctor, saying he was his proctologist and stuff, and Christopher Reeves said that was the first time that he had smiled since his accident. So I think Robin Williams understood the power of comedy, but the people that grew up with him, especially the newest generation, they remember him from stuff like Aladdin, and it's more nostalgia that makes them feel good by proxy. Mm-hmm. By remembering him being involved.
I guess he kind of felt that he couldn't help himself, and instead of helping himself, he decided to spread the love and help others, and millions of people were touched and moved by him, and I'm sure it changed a lot of people's lives and stuff, and the thing is, it's something that he was dealing with himself, and that's the best way you can deal with it, I guess.
He took up cycling. He started doing races with disabled cyclists to kick his own alcohol habit. That was his rehabilitation from that behavior. And I don't know. He's such a great example of what we're talking about. It's crazy, but
the whole thing that I've taken from his passing. And the most profound thing, and I think even greater than when he was here, is the shock. The shock that is still stinging in the minds and hearts of people. How could he do that? It just brings this whole new level of awareness to emotional health. The generation my father grew up in, it's most of his elders were in the military. And they didn't have feelings, and they were men, and they did war.
Yeah.
And when I was trying to, bless my dad, he's amazing, but when I was trying to communicate to him, I'm feeling these strong thoughts. They are not from a loving place, and I don't feel like myself. I'm down, and he would say, it's all in your mind. And yeah, he was right, but that's not what I needed to hear. I needed to come to that realization from another perspective. In the passing of someone we all admire and cherish brings about that perspective. We talked earlier about there has to be a moment where something shifts your consciousness. Somebody dying is pretty profound. And I think when he died, and especially in the manner, it brought a whole new light to this emotional trauma that anybody can suffer, and often in silence. But the gift I like to give people is the power of self-desire. If you want to be well, you can.
A lot of times, I guess, specifically in Robin Williams' case, you're blinded to the idea that you can change things. And a lot of times, I've had moments where I'm having a certain feeling, where it'd be sadness or anything like that. But a lot of times I felt content being at that feeling. I felt I felt happy being in that moment and stuff. But it's toxic, and you have to actually see it for what it is, and sometimes it takes an outside perspective to see it. But all in all, it takes a conscious effort in order to changing of what you're experiencing. And the perspective has a lot to do with it. If you don't see any other options, how are you gonna go for it? Sometimes you just have to blindly go for it.
Mm-hmm. I want to talk a little bit more about emotional release, talk about pros and cons. So in a world where repressed emotions are the cultural norm, It has often been the goal of therapy to facilitate an emotional release. Sometimes simple catharsis can bring out profound healing and transformation. Simply letting go of something that has been long held in the body can allow the body to reform itself in new ways. Emotional release does not always bring healing. However, in some cases where trauma is severe or emotional patterns such as anger or tears are too well established, it may overwhelm the person, create further feelings of helplessness, or drive the emotional grooves even deeper into habitual response. When emotional release is simply a discharge of energy without cognitive, keyword, integration, it brings short-term relief, but seldom permanent changes. The person seeks this release again and again. Emotional release is the instinctual psychic movement from the unconscious to the conscious. Emotional release completes actions that have been interrupted. If we could not fully feel or express our emotions the first time around, we create new situations where we can feel them. Emotions held in the body fixate our energy in holding patterns, making it unavailable to us. Once an emotion is released, we can reclaim that energy and create a new orientation to the situation. Once we have grieved a death, we can let it go. Once we have not acknowledged a fear, we can take steps to overcome it. Emotional release fully involves the body. It is not enough for the head to simply acknowledge the sadness or anger. There is a movement associated with each emotion, and until the movement is freed up, the energy vortex of all the emotions will remain. Many clients come to me from other therapists who help them considerably in understanding their patterns and behavior in light of their history. They say, "I know my sexual attitudes are a result of the abuse from my father. I've worked on it for years, but it hasn't changed." Change is movement. And in order to create change, there has to be both internal and external movement in the body. Blocked emotion is bound into the structure of the body. When I work to free up buried feelings, I ask the person to exaggerate what I see her body doing unconsciously. If I see her fidgeting, I ask her to exaggerate those movements. If I see her contracting, I ask her to exaggerate the contraction. This brings unconsciousness movements and their attendant feelings into the consciousness. While she holds the exaggerated position, I ask her what kind of feeling this elicits. If an answer is not apparent, I ask her to verbalize what her body is saying. Someone contracted might be saying, "Don't touch me." Someone who is fidgeting might be saying, "I don't want to be here." I then ask her to express the same statement or feeling through movement. If you were on a stage and had to express this feeling without any word, what would you do? This embodies the feelings and simultaneously brings it into consciousness awareness. This process usually taps the natural flow of feeling in the body sooner or later. At this point, I become the facilitator for the feeling. If there's anger, I give them a bat to hit the couch. If there is sadness, I offer comfort and sympathy. If there is fear, I offer resources for strength, invite movements that are opposite to the contraction, and stabilize their energy through grounding techniques.
I guess what he was kind of doing was coaxing his patient to actually embrace those feelings and actually, you know, try to understand them, you know, try to, like, run them through. Because a lot of times we stifle our feelings and stuff. We know what they are. We see them. We are aware of them. We are acting on them. but we don't really look into like what are the roots of those fears. We have to actually examine and take them apart, figure out, you know, what they're made out of.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said earlier, like, you know, fear is a good emotion. It you know, warns us of certain things that are imminent.
Mm-hmm.
And in understand them, we have to actually think of them and process the actual feelings for what they are.
I just thought of the most bizarre notions. Like, I am afraid that in the future humans will be conditioned to not fear. wouldn't that be a trip? I mean, it already is, but...
If we weren't afraid, we would feel infinite. Like, imagine if we lived in a world where we didn't have to be afraid.
Well, I mean, the thing is, though, then that's going to be doubly bad as well, because there are things that we need to fear. We need to fear, we need to understand that there are dangers. We need to fear that, you know, fire is bad. You know, if you walk into fire, it's going to burn you.
Right.
You know, and there's certain, you know, that's why fear is important, because it lets you know when you're going to, you know, come to something that's a force to be reckoned with.
It's true. You got me thinking with the possibility that we may be conditioned.
And we can't live completely fear-free, you know, because then we'd just be arrogant.
It's true. There has to be a balance in everything, right? But I feel like a lot of people existing here get trapped in that fear, and they miss the point. The point is, bad things are not happening to you. The point is, you're allowing things that are happening to be bad. The point is that... Ooh, somebody's calling us. Let's see here. Hey, welcome to the show. What do you want to talk about?
Oh, well, I was just listening. I was listening to the radio right now on my laptop. I don't know if it's streaming live or...
It is streaming live.
Oh.
What's your name?
Well, I was just gonna make a comment about a statement just made about trauma and feelings.
Okay, let's hear it.
I was just gonna share. Wait, I myself had know a little bit about feelings, because whenever you suppress feelings, it always comes back, like, always manifests into a different area. Like the people who often suppress their feelings, their feelings usually have some type of issue. Like me myself, I had problems with anxiety, and I tried to suppress my own anxiety, but that came back and hit me through, and I had issues with, I guess digestive issues. So it really affects your health, like emotions and your physical body. Emotions affect your body physically, so it's important to stay in touch with how you feel. And I know you said something about trauma. We often have triggers, things that put us off, some things from the past that might put us off that we might not recognize, like anxiety and depression could be triggered by an event, and that veers back to something that happened in the past. For example, it could be minor. Whenever you hear the word trauma, we think of something extreme, like extreme abuse, but it could be anything minor from childhood. Like, personally, for me, my anxiety was more orientated with fitting in, I would say. I noticed throughout high school, whenever I'd get on a bus, I'd get anxious. Mm-hmm. And I was always in a crowded bus when I started high school. I didn't know what that was coming from, but through when I looked into that more deeply, I recognized that, like, going back to like elementary school, I had a bad experience on going on buses. The first time I took a bus, I remember the first time I took the bus, it was crowded. No one left room for me, and that was pretty, I guess, as a kid in elementary school, that was pretty traumatizing for me. It was sad, and from there on, I didn't like the idea of being in crowds because I felt defensive as if being separated from a group.
I still feel the same way, actually. I'm actually a performer, and I go out, and like the only way that I feel comfortable in groups of people is if I actually have like a job and I can focus on it. And I still suffer like really, really bad social anxiety, crowds especially. And I remember as early as middle school having like quarters thrown at me on the bus and like being picked on. So that actually was an eye opener for myself. I never really connected any experience like that before.
Yes. It's kind of funny how it could be any little thing that puts you off and it bites you on in the future. I noticed in high school, whenever I'd get into a cafeteria, I'd get like anxious. I'd have anxiety. I'd be nervous. But what that really was fear of not being accepted, of not knowing where to sit. And that goes back to, for me, that went back to the bus issue in elementary school. I had a bad experience with fitting in. No one would leave the seat open for me when I got on the bus, and that was trauma.
Mm-hmm.
So it could always be something little. Doesn't always have to be something major.
And I think
major to say or so, but yeah, it's important to confront. It's important to stay in touch with your emotion and see like where to see what it's rooted from, because that's important to. Because we do live in a society where we try to suppress our feelings, but it's important to be creative and express ourselves. Because if we didn't have feelings, we pretty much just be robots.
Word, brother. Yeah. Word.
So, yeah. It would be cheating to try to like suppress, to take away fear, anxiety. Because you know that's part of the journey, overcoming, and that's what makes that's what it's about, overcoming. Overcoming your emotions, because our emotions is really what makes us human. And I remember with a friend, I saw a film on Netflix called Equilibrium, where there's a utopian society where the government sedates everybody so they don't feel anything.
Huh.
And it was a really good film. And they take away everything. They take away art. Anything that resembles emotion, sad, or happiness is punished with prison. And everyone is forced to take sedatives that suppress their emotion. And literally to rebel is to not take your medication and to actually feel. It's a good movie. It's with Christian Bale. Equilibrium.
Have you ever heard of the book The Giver by Lois Lowry?
What movie?
It's actually a book. Actually, making it into a movie soon. Their society, they generated them to be all in black and white, and they would assign jobs at certain ages. And there was this one person that was always singled out after so many years that would be the holder of like memories, and they would actually have to be like the ones that held all the bad memories, so like these people could go around as robots. And it's a really, really, really good read. I think it actually ended up being kind of like a Christian undertone book, which I never really caught because I read it at a young age. And just like the thought of like having the emotion removed and someone like being the bearer of just the bad memories for people so they can live this like life always was really powerful to me.
Wow. That sounds like a good book.
Yeah. Buddy, thanks for calling. I think you touched on a really good point, especially when you shared with us that you physically were not able to function. You were not able to digest things because you weren't dealing with your emotion. And
yeah.
You brought up a really good point, is we're not robots. We have these feelings, these things that compel us and move us to thwart us towards experience. And you got to go in it with an open heart and mind. And that particular experience that you're having is meant for you. And what is it teaching you, right? You have to move. You have to let it move through you.
Yeah, that's true. And the best way to deal with fears, you know, to feel the fear and do it anyways. Whatever's bothering you, whatever you're afraid of, the best way to deal with it is to confront it. And it's tough. It's tough. It's not easy, but it's the way to go. Confrontation. Sometimes confrontation's the way.
Well, nothing easy is worth doing.
It's true. It took a lot. Took a lot of your energy to call in. I appreciate you sharing your perspective with us.
No problem. And I like your post, the Facebook post from Anti-Media.
Oh, thank you.
It's really informative. I appreciate the work you guys do.
Good
stuff.
You should share it. You know, we're really a group of people who I call it compassionate, because we're compassionate about other people and we're pissed off about what's going on in the world. So we're compassionate and we're inspired to speak the truth, and an unbiased truth, and a truth that needs to be heard. And we try to do so continuously and from the heart, and it feels good to be acknowledged.
I really do appreciate that, and it's a good thing. It's a good thing that you guys are doing, because there's a lot of misinformation out there, and you know, you tell a lie long enough, and people actually believe it becomes truth.
It's true.
You actually think it's truth, and it's important to challenge the status quo and keep asking questions.
I couldn't agree with you more, sir. And if you haven't noticed already, Mondays and Wednesdays on the show, we talk about current events and politics. And most of us are aware that those things usually aren't the most happiest, bubbliest content. You know, those things don't invoke happy feelings. So Friday nights, I try and balance all that external with some introspection. I try and speak on things that remind us that we are here feeling these things, and we're not just here to consume. There's way much more going on. So thank you for listening, and thank you for participating. We read some pretty awesome books tonight. I encourage people to read all the time. We touched on Buddhism for Beginners, Eastern Body, Western Mind, and we didn't get to the Bhagavad Gita, but actually we did. I did read from there, I think. Actually, no, I didn't. but next time, what's your name, sir?
Jess.
Thank you from Connecticut. Thank you for calling in all the way from Connecticut. I want to visit there sometime soon. But we'll be on Monday at same time, 8:00, top of the hour Pacific time. Same thing on Wednesday and Friday. You can find me here. UCY has lots of programs, though, not just Anti-Media. Make sure you check it out. It's pretty much around the clock. So you have a beautiful night in Connecticut, and we'll see you guys back on Monday. Same station, same hour. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Let them know through the stereo. Yo, here we go through the stereo.